And when you're someone from an Asian background, South Asian background, there's so much judgment, taboo and stereotypes thrust upon you, right, with community and like what you should look like, what you should be like, who you should be. And I felt like, honestly, a complete failure. Yeah. So first of all, I just kept myself to myself. And I found that the only way I could do that was to literally draw back from my parents and my sister. And that was, I put them through hell. Like looking back, I've lost my dad now. And so many times I'll just sit there and think like, that was precious time I could have had. That's what my skin did to me. That's my skin's fault.
Hey everyone, and welcome to another episode of I Am Beautiful Talks. My name is Renee and I'm your host. And today I'm joined with the lovely Natalie Ambersley and Jyoti Gataora. And today we'll be talking all things confidence, self-love, and also a bit about just, I guess, what's going on right now on social media and so on and so forth. So I thought I might as well ask you guys to introduce yourselves, tell us a bit about what you do. I know both of you have been featured on things such as the BBC. You've done work with the British Skin Foundation. A lot of you have been, you guys have also been in the papers in regards to like what your story is and the things that you guys have been able to do in the local community and in just the, I guess, online community in regards to vitiligo. So we'll start with Natalie, if you go first.
Sure. So hi everyone, I'm Natalie. By day I'm an executive assistant working in finance, but outside of my day job I am also a blogger and an advocate for the skin condition vitiligo, which is a skin condition that I've had since I was 3 years old. So I've had it for around 35 years. My journey has been quite difficult with the condition, but kind of bringing it to the present. Yes, I have been very fortunate in that I have featured in some amazing campaigns, such as Dove, and featured in some great British magazines, sharing my story and using my platform to use my voice and empower people with skin conditions.
Perfect. And she definitely does do that. If you guys are on Instagram, her page is Being Just Us. You guys check it out. See what Natalie's doing. She's always doing something in relation to empowerment. So honestly, it is definitely worth a follow for sure. So Jyoti, over to you.
Hi, Renee. First, thanks, guys, for having me on. It's really nice to be here and to talk to you about a topic that's so close to my heart. I'm 43 years old. I'm a mum of two kids. By profession, I'm a teacher. I've been working in a high school for 16 years.
Wow.
Just resigned yesterday. Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, big step. To go into the love of what I love doing, which is presenting and talking to people who've got visual skin conditions and disabilities. So, yeah, like Nat, I've been doing loads of projects about empowering young people and people of today about being secure and happy about the skin that they're in and loving the way they are, even if they look different. I've done that a lot at school, done loads of motivational talks at school, but also done really powerful projects outside of school, like London Fashion Week and Good Housekeeping Campaign, and just some stuff to really sort of show people and showcase that you don't have to look a certain way to be on those, you know, to be in that sort of industry.
Yeah.
So I'm really on a journey of self-love, but kind of getting a little bit more into the media, talking about these topics and breaking the taboos that kind of go alongside having vitiligo.
Perfect. Thank you so much, guys, for sharing just a bit about yourselves. You can also find Jyoti on Instagram too, and it is positively diverse. Yes, that's it. Give her a follow as well. She's got amazing things coming up. I've seen your YouTube channel.
Yeah,
I watched a bit of the video you did recently with a lady talking about in relation to the workplace and things that people can do just to help, I guess, be there for individuals who may need extra support, which you don't really see often unless it's got to the point where, you know, there's no other option. So give her a follow, and also just be mindful that these guys are always doing something. So there will be interesting things you guys can also get involved in. So I thought we might as well start from the beginning. I know, Natalie, you've already mentioned that you were diagnosed with vitiligo at a very young age, which is slightly different to Jyoti, which was around 21, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So we'll start with you, Natalie. If you just tell us a bit about your childhood and what self-love looked like at that time.
Yeah, sure. So as I mentioned, I developed vitiligo when I was 3 years old. So I actually wasn't aware that I had the condition because I was so young. So I actually had an amazing childhood. Obviously, when I was diagnosed, my mum and my dad managed the condition for me. So the first thing they'd done when they saw the first spot on my hand was take me to the GP to try and get a diagnosis. But I didn't get that straight away because in the 80s, when I was born, vitiligo wasn't a very common condition. You didn't see people with the condition sort of out and about. So for a long time, I thought vitiligo had been created for me only, which is a really bizarre feeling. So I had a great childhood. My parents would dress me in skirts and T-shirts and shorts during the summer. I went swimming, so I'd wear a swimsuit. And I genuinely didn't know that I was different. I grew up in a really multicultural area in East London where there were black people, white people, Asian people. So I just fitted into that because we was all different. And it's really funny because as a child, you think quite creatively about why you are the way you are. And for a long time, because I'm mixed race, I thought my brown skin represented my dad who was black and my white skin represented my mum who was white. So that was how I explained it. So, you know, as I said, I fitted in. No one really said anything. I had one episode at school that I really recall, which was when a little boy went to touch me one time. And I must have been about seven. And he jumped back and said, "I'm not going to touch you because I think your skin's contagious." And of course, that did kind of ring a bit of an alarm in my mind. But it wasn't enough for me to kind of topple over or think that I was still this person that was different to everybody else. I just kind of brushed it off my shoulders and got on with it. So, you know, I loved my childhood. I didn't really think about my skin. I was in and out of hospital for years trying new creams, new tablets. And again, because there were other children there, I thought all kids went to hospital. So again, it was very much a natural part of my childhood. So yeah, I loved my childhood with vitiligo.
So would you say that there was no element of, or not to the extent I guess some people deal with, lack of self-love or lack of, you know, feeling less than?
I don't think as children you understand what self-love is because we're so innocent. We just see people as people. We don't recognize that there's a difference between being white and being black. We just love people and want to be around the people that we care about. So to me, self-love didn't even really exist. I mean, my parents were always telling me that I was pretty and that I was beautiful because obviously they were aware that these were the topics that were going to come up later in life. But it wasn't something that really stood out for me. My parents told me I was beautiful and I was like, okay, yeah, I'm just a pretty little girl and I've got, you know, vitiligo and that's okay. So I think it's really nice that you don't have to think about it. You don't have to think about being confident. It's just part of your makeup as a child.
Yeah.
It's when you go into your teenage years, those things then change. Start to surface.
Yeah, definitely. And we'll go on to that. And yourself, Jyoti, how would you say childhood was for you and then the transition, I guess, up to around early teenage / early adult years, to be honest, 21, pretty much an adult, more or less.
Yeah, Renee. my childhood, because I didn't have vitiligo before the age of 21. Mm. So for me, I never really considered other conditions and visual differences at that age. I didn't even know anyone who had struggled or gone through anything like this. I had an amazing childhood, like you know, and when I look back, body image was never an issue. I think the only thing that I had which was an issue was like when I was in secondary school, like body hair. And as an Asian girl, you know, I had quite a lot of black body hair, like, you know, on my legs. So for PE and stuff, I was conscious about that. But then, you know, lots of other girls were going through that change as well. So it's quite normal.
True.
I didn't stand out in any other way. Because, you know, lots of us was going through those similar changes. My main change started at the age of 21. That's when my whole life changed.
And I want to know a bit more about that. So tell us how that transition went from how things were before to now you've...
Oh my God, Renee, like I was like at uni, I was crazy. I mean, I was crazy. I was out clubbing. I was like enjoying myself. I was living in Spain for a year because I was like studying Spanish. So I was, I was living life like to the full. And I was on my year abroad in Spain and I came back from this year abroad, right? And I noticed that I had this white spot on the left arm, on the left of my arm. And I actually noticed it when I was living in Spain. I said to my flatmate, "What do you think this is?" And she was like, "I don't know what it is." And we were like talking about it. Well, what's this come from? Maybe it's the sun exposure. And yeah, I didn't wear like proper factor because in the south of Spain, it's like so hot.
Feeling,
So I got back and then this spot started to spread. My tan started to go and the spot started to get bigger and bigger and bigger. Mm. So at that point, my parents were like, okay, what is this? What's going on? My sister was like, what is this? Like, maybe you did expose yourself to the sun. You know, that's what we all thought it was.
Yeah.
And when I went to the GP diagnosed it straight away as vitiligo. Like, there wasn't much on social media. Again, like now, I was a late born child in the 70s, right? So there wasn't much stuff going on the internet about awareness or more research and stuff you could do. It was literally go to your GP and find out what there is.
Yeah.
And when she said you've got vitiligo, and she looked at me and she said, there's two options, PUVA, or you just let it go the way it is, and this, your whole body could turn white. Can you imagine a GP saying that to you at 21 years old when you're out enjoying your life, right?
Yeah.
You've got nothing wrong with yourself, right? And you're living life to the max. And suddenly she says this white spot could take over your whole body. And I'm looking at her thinking, okay. Like, I couldn't even quite digest it.
Yeah, I can imagine. Were your parents there with you at the time, or was this...
My mum, yeah, my mum's a nurse as well, right?
Oh,
so
wow.
She's sitting by my side, and in all her nursing profession, right, Renee, she's not seen many patients with vitiligo. So even for her, she was just like, what is this happening? Yeah. What's happening to my daughter?
Goodness me.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy. So do you feel like this was something which you would definitely say you were so unprepared for in receiving this type of information?
Oh my God,
just
21
completely.
Years, right, from that, yeah. 21 years, so many things happened to me. I became an introvert, I was anxious, my skin started spreading more, I cut off from my best friends, I wasn't the one that was going out in central London with my friends any longer, and when I did go out, it took me 3 hours to cover from top to bottom to make sure that no one saw a thing, right? And at that point, I was like, literally, I took a year out of uni, because that's how much it affected me. So I kind of messed up my third year. That's how much it affected me.
Yeah.
I was psychologically going downhill, and no one could do anything about it around me, not even my parents. I was literally going down into depression.
Wow.
And that's what happened to me.
Wow.
Yeah.
Let's touch on that though. So I guess, Natalie, as well, going back to yourself, how did now both of you, you're at the stage of fully being diagnosed with vitiligo, how did this start to affect your relationships? I know you mentioned you became more of an introvert, but we'll go back to Natalie. How did this affect relationships, whether it was romantic or friendships?
It's so interesting hearing it from the other side, where someone develops it at such a crucial time when you're enjoying yourself and you can watch your skin change, in comparison to me not knowing what it looks, what it feels like to not have it. So for me, you know, during my teenage years, I didn't have boyfriends, you know, and my dad was incredibly happy about that. He didn't have to deal with boys or anything like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, there was absolutely no way that I was going to have a boyfriend with this skin condition. My skin ruled my life completely. I couldn't go swimming, or I'd go swimming, but I'd run to the changing rooms 5 minutes before to get changed. And then I'd stand in that changing room and be really anxious and uncomfortable. And I'd use my hands to try and cover all of my body. Like, it's impossible to do that. And then when I finally would emerge around the swimming pool, I would creep in like I didn't want no one to see me. It literally affected everything. I loved sport. I thought I was going to be the next athlete that was going to be at the Olympics.
Yeah.
And ironically, all I could focus on was, if I do the 100 metres, I'm going to have to wear them hot pants. So let's just leave that profession out of, you know, let's just leave that profession out of it. It affected everything that I'd done. I woke up every day living and breathing this skin condition in a really, really negative way. So, yeah, so I didn't have boyfriends. You know, I would occasionally find out that there was a boy in another class that fancied me, but I was in denial. It was like, there's absolutely no way that boy fancies me. Like, why would he fancy me when you've got all these beautiful girls with their clear skin looking nice? There's no way they're going to fancy me. So, yeah, I was pretty late when it came to relationships. I had my first boyfriend when I was 19 years old. And it has affected relationships. And it's funny because I don't really talk about relationships too much, but it's a part of the journey. And for me, it's always been something like, is it something I'm going to have to discuss? If I've gone to a bar and met a guy and we're talking and the vibe is good and there's that positive energy, in the back of my head, all I'm thinking is, okay, do I tell him about my skin? Do I wait for him to ask? Oh my God, what if he's looking at my hands? Because my hands are the most noticeable. I'm having that internal dialogue whilst trying to get to know this person and enjoy being in his company. So it's just always there, like a elephant
in
the
cloud, just...
absolute
cloud. And I did have one episode with a guy that just completely let that elephant in the room run away, and he's not been back since. And it was just a beautiful moment where I realised that men aren't really thinking about my skin. They're thinking about the person they're talking to, and they're enjoying being in that company and connecting. And if the connection's there, that's all they're thinking about. They're not thinking about my skin.
Mm. I might ask you to share that situation. Want to know definitely about that. Josie, what about yourself? How did this affect relationships, whether it was friendships or romantic relationships?
Yeah, so Renee, there's three areas of my life that it affected. So with my parents, I found the only way that I could manage this was to distance myself from them. Wow. Because the more I distance myself, the more they wouldn't see the pain I'm going through. And when you're someone from an Asian background, South Asian background, there's so much judgment, taboo and stereotypes thrust upon you, right, with community and like what you should look like, what you should be like, who you should be. And I felt like, honestly, a complete failure. Yeah. So first of all, I just kept myself to myself. And I found like the only way I could do that was to literally draw back from my parents and my sister. And that was, I put them through hell. Like looking back, I've lost my dad now. And so many times I'll just sit there and think like, that was precious time I could have had. That's what my skin did to me. That's my skin's fault. You know, it took that love and that connection away from my parents. The second thing was my friends. I still have them say to me, you know, you really hurt me the time that you pushed me away, because at that time I didn't have a mobile. We didn't have mobiles. They'd call the house phone and I'd say to my parents, tell them I'm not in. And they knew that I was in, but I didn't want to speak to anyone because no one understood. Renee, how's someone going to understand this skin condition when they're not going through it themselves, even my best friends? So the only way I did manage that was just reject them and push them away. Wow. And still to this day, they're like, you know what? You pushed us away. You know, we were hurt and we really missed you that time. So they that was the second lot. The third one was my husband, who was my best friend at that time. Now, I met him when I was brown. I met him at uni when I was brown. And I went on my year abroad. We weren't together at that time. We were really good friends. When I came back from Spain, we started connecting and we started developing some kind of, you know, like connection there. Mm. And I realised that he was there for me when I didn't have vitiligo and when I was there for vitiligo. And that for me was like, this guy is solid. This guy is real. He's not like any other Asian guy who's just looking at me for what I look like. He's looking at me for what's inside. Yeah. And that's when I realised that I wanted to kind of get to know him more. So after I graduated, things got a bit more serious. Yeah. And I told my parents about him and he's like, he's a different religion to me. He's Catholic and I'm Sikh. Okay. And they weren't best pleased about it. But when they knew that what I'd gone through with my skin and realised I'd met someone who loved, someone loves our daughter, right, for her. Not for the way she looks, not for the way she dresses, not for what she has, yeah. Not for, you know, whatever, the other materialistic stuff. They love, you know, he loves her for her. And that's when I realised I was going to just marry this guy. Mm. And, you know, to this day, he's been through that journey of seeing me go through a treatment. I did a steroid treatment in 2010 before I had my daughter. I was brown again. I was brown from top to bottom because I was on a steroid treatment. Yeah. Which worked. And now he's seen me turn back white again. So I do believe that there are people out there who aren't materialistic, who aren't superficial, and will see beyond that. I really do believe that. I mean,
No, I'm so glad you both even touched on the element of especially romantic relationships. Because a lot of the time, again, going back to social media, we see how the outside is just considered, you know, the holy grail and that's all you need to look for. But just showing that you guys are like, hold on a second, there's people who love you for who you are, regardless of anything that's going on, whether it's personal in your life or things that they can experience and see for themselves. This is what people need to remember. Honestly, they do. And I want to hear your story as well with the guy, if you can share it.
Yeah, sure. So, you know, dating was really, really hard. But I'd always try and put myself out there because everyone deserves love. Everyone deserves to meet their life partner or their soul partner. And I'd be getting ready for a date and my uniform was always the same. It'd be something long-sleeved or a long-sleeved blazer and I'd have a top on underneath. and I'd obviously wear jeans as well. And even if I went on the date and I'd get really, really hot, that blazer weren't coming off if I had something short-sleeved on underneath. So with this particular guy, I turned up on the date and he was hot. He was lovely looking, just dressed well, was charming, had charisma. And one of the things that I tended to do on a date was when I was conversing, I'd leave my hands under the table because my hands are the most noticeable, and I'd be talking. And I'm quite, I like to use my hands, but I'd give them under the table because I just didn't want to deal with the situation of him asking me what it was. So we went on date one, we was having food, we was vibing, it was all great. Fine, we left and we decided to see each other for a second time. So on the second date, I'd done exactly the same thing, but he must have picked up on this because it just looks weird when you've got your hands under the table all the time. And literally, in a moment that took about 30 seconds, but felt like about half an hour to me, he took my hand from under the table, put it in his hand, and he looked at my skin, kissed my hand and said, "Your skin's actually really beautiful. In fact, I've got a friend who's got a patch on his eye and I know it's vitiligo." And you know when your heart just sinks in that moment when you think, what on earth is he going to say? And then he said something so nice and so endearing. And that was the moment when that elephant left and he's not been back since. And that was when I realised that these things don't count. There are a small proportion of people, men, women, that will look at someone's skin condition and think, you know what, that isn't for me. And that's absolutely fine. But the majority of people will see a soul. They will see your heart. They will see how much joy you bring and your personality. And that is what your core makeup is. So that's why now I can go on a date. I can wear t-shirts. If you want to ask about it, ask about it. Sometimes I might even crack a little joke about what it is. And it just makes it so much easier. And I've had all sorts of comments, you know, some comments that are inappropriate, some comments that are just really lovely. But my skin plays no part in my dating life now, which is absolutely amazing for me.
And I'm so glad you guys have both touched on that again, because it goes back to just the idea of confidence. A lot of women, men, just people in general are very, it's almost like being vulnerable has to take months and months. But sometimes it's just saying, do you know what? This is who I am. Accept it or not. And just being around people who are willing to accept makes a massive difference. We're going to go on to some vitiligo facts because I feel like some people, they think they might know things, but then they don't. Or some people are maybe aware that there are people who may be saying things which aren't necessarily true. So let's just see if we can debunk some of these. So the first one is vitiligo is an autoimmune disorder and not merely a cosmetic problem. So my question is, have you guys experienced comments before like, you know, oh, just you could just cover up with makeup, or, you know, eventually won't it get smaller, things like that? Or yeah, what would you say?
So yes, it is an autoimmune condition. And in really simple terms, what happens is our autoimmune system attacks the good cells and creates the white patches on our skin. And obviously melanin is what makes your pigments. So obviously we don't have that in where the white areas are.
Yeah.
As a condition, it is probably one of the most devastating visible conditions that are out there. And there are over 3,000 skin conditions. So it's very much psychological. There are other symptoms to vitiligo. But for me, vitiligo is all that I have. So when you go to your doctor and you explain to him that I've got these patches on my skin, all they are thinking is it's not life-threatening, so you can do simple things. We'll put you on some treatment and we'll try that, and half the time it doesn't work. Or we'll suggest some makeup, which is often theatre-style makeup. It's very thick and you've got to paste it on. I mean, obviously things have changed now because you've got makeup brands that are adapting to people's skin tones, but, you know, that was back in the day. But, yeah, the core thing that people will often say, because it's not life-threatening, well, you can just cover it up, but it's not as easy as that, because a lot of it is psychological. A lot of it is about it being very, very visible and people being able to see it on your skin.
So true. I've got a question for you, Jyoti. So another fact is 70 million people across the world have vitiligo, so that's about 1% of the population. Do you feel like there's enough support for those who do have the skin condition of vitiligo, or is there more that should be done?
Yeah, that's a really good question, Renee. I think back in the day, no, of course not. Now things have changed and evolved so much. I think that the presence of social media is the support network for people, because when they go to their local GP, they are still being directed in the same way as Nat said. You know, try the Puva, try camouflage makeups. Camouflage makeup, and you know, these are the two options for you. Yeah. But the biggest thing that people can actually do is reach out and get some, you know, verbal communicative support from people and support groups around, because those are the people that are going through that condition themselves. And just that, the power of words, I think, is just incredible. Being able to just message someone and sort of talk to them can give that person so much strength that, you know, they can't get from anywhere else. And like I said, you know, for me, I couldn't talk to my best friends, even though they were my best friends. I couldn't talk to my mum and dad, even that, though, you know, it's my family. So just being able to talk to people that are going through that same journey, people who've just been diagnosed, or people who are going through that process of trying out different treatments, or even, you know, people who've come out of their shell and are sharing their life journey openly. And I think, to me, I think social media has got a massive, massive advantage and positive side to it, where it is empowering people of today.
Definitely. I would definitely agree with you with that. And like anything else, it depends what you're looking at as well. Social media has a very, I don't know, bad name to it, I guess. Mm-hmm. But like you said, finding people who are either not struggling, dealing with the same situation as yourself, or have similar background to yourself, can be so empowering when you're going through the same situation. So I definitely agree with you with that one. Here's another one, which we all should know by now. Vitiligo is not contagious. So I know you mentioned that you experienced a little boy who back in the day at school was like, you know, I'm not going to touch you. If does that happen now, or of you?
It was such an original thing to say. In fact, if I ever hear that, you know, you just think, are we still here with that one?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I haven't heard it for years.
Yeah.
I think the people that are going to ask them sort of questions have every right to ask that question if it's something they are genuinely curious about, but it's down to education.
Yeah.
You know, if you've got someone who's never seen the experience, you know, never seen vitiligo before, they've grown up in a community where there's no one with the condition, they're going to ask that question. So it's completely valid. But I've not had that question for years. And again, it is just about educating people. Mm. You can't catch a skin condition. Like, honestly, it's smooth. Mm. It's impossible. Absolutely impossible to catch. Mm. So, yeah.
Mm. And yourself?
Yeah, same Renee. So when I was doing motivational talks at school, I did get a few of the girls that did ask, like, Miss, but can someone else get it? Now, they know I'm working in a school. If I've got it, they're all going to have it, you know? If it's contagious, then they're all going to have it. No, I mean, obviously, it's not contagious. But you know what it is? It's about teaching them. I mean, some of them are asking it because they've never seen it. They don't know what it is. And it's about just telling them directly what it is. I think, like Natalie said, it's about educating people. I haven't had anyone directly sort of say to me, is it contagious? I have had the odd comment from students at school, but Miss, can you spread it? Or another one actually is, can your kids get it? Miss, have your kids got it? When we've kind of had this conversation. So I suppose it's similar to, you know, what is it contagious? Can your kids get it? Is it hereditary? Yeah. I think people are curious from that point of view.
Definitely.
But yeah, not many comments like that, thank God.
And I think you guys have both touched on exactly the same thing. Educating people about things makes a massive difference to then how they perceive it, I guess.
Absolutely.
And then I've got one more for you guys. Many of the currently available treatments are not covered by insurance, and more research and treatments are needed. Have you guys experienced this, where you feel as though you're forking out a lot just to be able to be seen by someone who can give you advice, or was it very much smooth sailing?
So for me, it's been smooth sailing. All my treatment has been on the NHS.
Okay.
So about 8 years ago, I had UVB narrowband treatment.
Okay.
And when I went to see my GP, he was like, yeah, we'll put you forward. But that's because I had it more than 60%, so mine was quite aggressive. So I don't know if it depends on how bad your vitiligo is, but yeah, I had treatment for 13 months and it was on the NHS. But in terms of actual treatment, obviously there isn't a cure for vitiligo. There are treatments out there, but they're not guaranteed to work. For me, UVB narrowband treatment, it was a 50-50% chance. And my white patches are now coming back quite quickly. But when it comes to treatment, I think there needs to be a really healthy balance. So when I was diagnosed, the first thing they say is, okay, we'll try you on a cream. And obviously that was back in the 80s. But I think we need a balance in terms of what we call psychodermatology, which is teaching people how to manage it with their mind. Psychologically, how do you manage a condition? Training their mindset to feel comfortable and to feel confident being in society with a condition. So yes, give people the treatment options, but also give people the options like CBT, therapy, counselling, so they can manage it mentally as well. I think that's really important.
Definitely would agree with you on that one. And yourself?
Do you know, I want to go back to what you said, Natalie, because that's a massive part that was not talked about when I went to my GP. And I think that, you know, like, and I talk a lot about school because, you know, young people are going through all these anxieties and different changes themselves. And I kind of seen it over the last 16 years. I do talk about this and refer to it quite a lot. But if people know how to deal and manage with stress and anxiety, and in the same way a skin condition, they're going to be better individuals when they're older, or even, you know, manage to kind of deal with it in a better way. So, and 100%, if I had that support 21 years ago, I wouldn't have gone down the depression route. So you're absolutely right. I think there has to be some sort of CBT, some kind of almost like grieving therapy, because you are losing the body that you are in and changing into someone else. My skin has changed my identity. You know, when people look at me, I'm like, I'm Asian, but, you know, sometimes people don't see that. And that's a massive part of who I am. So even sort of grieving as well, loss. I think that's really, really important. Like you said about UVB, I mean, yeah, there's treatment out there. I did the UVB, didn't work for me. I spent a lot on the steroid treatment and it worked. It worked for me. And that's the crazy thing. It worked. I was at one point in my life, oh my God, I'm brown again. You know, I got my skin back. I'm an Indian girl again. I got my skin back. And I was on a high. I started my current school where I am now. They didn't even know I had vitiligo because I was a brown girl. I said to my head yesterday, I said, you know what? I was a brown girl when I've joined the school and I'm leaving like this. She just looked at me and she said, you've been on a massive transformational journey. And I said, yeah. I said, yeah. I said, this is what the skin condition's done to me, you know? And I think people can end up spending a hell of a lot of money. I did it and I thought that there was a cure at the end of it. I thought there was hope and I thought I was done. I was finished with vitiligo. Goodbye. See you later. You know, I'm back to normal now. What is normal? Do you know what I mean? But and now look, it's all reversed back. After I had my kids, all the hormones kicked in, and I'm white. I'm turning white again. It's crazy.
It's true, and I think sometimes people, like you said, they get treatments and they think the problem that they're dealing with will disappear, but sometimes that's not the case. And I don't know if it's sold like that to individuals, but sometimes you have to just get to the point of self-acceptance. Mm-hmm. I would definitely agree with you. So moving on from that, I'm Beautiful obviously talks a lot about self-confidence, self-worth, and accepting who you are. So my question to you guys would definitely have to be, for those who may be watching right now, who may be dealing with, you know, a lack of confidence, a lack of just feeling worthy as well of who they are, waking up every day and looking at in the mirror, what would you say to them, especially based on your own experiences?
The first thing I'll say, that don't give up. Mm-hmm. And if you are in a bad place now, it's absolutely fine to feel that way. You have every right to feel that way. But if you want to be in a better place, that place can come. There were two things that really helped me go from having zero confidence to maybe being at an 8 now. And that's finding my tribe and my mindset. You have to work on your mindset. We spend so much time worrying about what people outside, all those external factors, what are people thinking about us? Is he judging me? Is she judging me? They're not important. I put up so many barriers. There were so many things that I couldn't do, such as swimming, such as dating, such as going on a beach holiday. I put a stop to all that because I was worried about what people thought. And I realized that I'm not living my life because I'm worrying about everybody else. So I had to do a lot of work on my mindset and start being selfish and putting myself first. And that is when I was able to then get in a swimsuit, sit on the beach and enjoy a pina colada without worrying about everybody else. So you really need to focus on your mindset. But what I will say is, don't feel guilty for feeling down or depressed or uncomfortable. That time will come for you when you feel confident. The second thing is so important. Find your tribe. If I didn't have my community, I don't know where I'd be today. Because finding my community meant that people understood what I was going through. People understood that I wanted to have conversations. So now we can talk to each other about what we go through. I stopped feeling like I was being isolated. I found the people that I could connect with and that knew how it felt to have vitiligo. And I still talk to those people today. So, yeah, work on your mindset and find your people and reach out. Get support. Don't suffer in silence. talk, because there are so many people that will talk to you these days. We've got social media. We can talk to people in Australia, America, across the world.
So true.
Use those resources. They're there for you. People reach out to me from so many different places, and it warms my heart every single time. So yeah, just find those people that are going to be there for you. They're out there.
Really, really good advice, honestly. And yourself, Jyoti.
Actually, Renee, it's exactly the same, because that's the same place that I'm at as well. I think the first thing is, like, don't feel like you are alone. And based on my experience, I felt I was alone and I didn't reach out to anyone. So go out there and find, like Natalie says, find your tribe. Find your tribe. Where do you connect? Where do you fit in? And reach out for support. And like Nat, you know, I get a lot of messages from people where I'm supporting them now. And you know, supporting and helping them deal with what they're going through. Yeah. And that is the power of, you know, social media. That's the power of knowledge and strength and educating and just being there for someone, just listening, I think is just really, really important. Mm-hmm. Again, for me, it was all about mindset. You know, had I have not changed my mindset, I wouldn't be where I am today. But that takes time. Yeah. And in order to change your mindset, you've got to be around the right people. I'm not saying I was around the right people before. I was around the right people. But you've got to be around people who are kind of going on that journey with you as well, that can advise, support. Oh, do you know what? Try this out, or try that out. Do this. You know, kind of give you the support that you need as you're going through this experience.
Yeah.
And that is so strong as well within itself, mm-hmm. you know. And the most important thing is, you know what? Be you. Be you, be seen, be heard, be you, which is something which is part of my brand. I think it's so important. I think it's so important to be yourself. You don't have to put on this front on social media or outside to be someone that you're not. Yeah. Because the most important thing you can do to yourself, the most important thing you can justify and be authentic to yourself is by being yourself. And that is, you know, being self-assured and accepting the condition that you have.
Definitely. Some really powerful words from both of you, honestly. And I think it's the perfect time to, I guess, end this discussion. Although there's so much more we can talk about and so much more wisdom you guys have, honestly. I think just remind us again of your social media accounts and perhaps the blog that you do, the YouTube, and then, yeah.
Oh, fantastic. So I am on social media. I use Instagram the most because I absolutely love telling a visual story. So my Instagram is being_just_us, bit of a mouthful. And my blog is www.beingjustus.co.uk. I love to welcome all sorts of people, whether you have vitiligo, rosacea, psoriasis, come over. I love to share really valuable content that I feel just really kind of connects with people. So yeah, come over, join me on my journey. I'd love to welcome you.
Oh, thank you. And Jyoti?
Hey guys, and if you want to reach out, you need support, or you want to talk about something you're going through, feel free to do that at Positively Diverse. My Instagram handle is Positively Diverse. My Facebook is Positively Diverse. My YouTube is Positively Diverse. And my website is www.positivelydiverse.co.uk. Again, I talk about my vitiligo journey and support other people that are going through life-changing visual conditions and disabilities. So just reach out. I'm here if you want to chat.
Thank you so much, guys. And there you have it, guys. If you guys want to reach out to Natalie or Jyoti, go for it. Do it. They are waiting to give you advice, sound advice as well. I just want to thank you guys so, so much for being on the podcast. I've learned a lot. And to be honest, there was times I felt a bit emotional, but I just tried to hold it together. But I just love hearing when people have not just experienced something, but have an experience with a story where they can share the strength that has come from it. And it's just so powerful. And I know that those who are watching will definitely have got something from this podcast. So thank you guys again. And thank you everyone who's listening and watching. This has been I Am Beautiful Talks. And we have been joined with Natalie and Jyoti today.